You're listening to Real Conversations with Jacob Young. Real Conversations is sponsored by Boys Town, saving children, healing families for over 100 years. They literally are changing lives every single day, folks. Please, please go to boystown.org to find out how you can help support Boys Town. And while you're on the site, be sure to check out all the free parenting tips that they offer. RCJY is also sponsored by Lane Frost Brand, made for the champion in you. They have amazing hats, guys, hoodies, and so much more. Something for the entire family. Go to lanefrost.com. And while you're at it, use Jacob15. You're going to save 15% on anything and everything Lane Frost Brand. As an actor, when you're making a movie, you never really know how it will be received by the audience and which ones will stand the test of time. When my career was just getting started, I made one of those movies that has become a cult favorite and still is. To this day, seen on TV all the time, the movie that I'm referring to, The Girl Next Door. And I worked with this week's guest on that movie all those years ago. And recently, you saw him as Kit Carson on over the summer in Montana. He's here. He's going to join me this week because my guest this week is a dear friend of mine, my compadre, my hombre, mi amigo, actor Brandon Irons. You know what time it is. It's time to keep it real with Real Conversations with Jacob Young. Brandon, what's up, man? It's great to see you.
Mr. Youngblood. No, man. It has been a while.
It has been a while here. It has been a while. But dude, you know, it's like, you know, we met so many years ago, first of all. But at the same time, like, there's so many people that, like, they come and go in Hollywood. They go, I'm gonna make this decision, I'm gonna be the actor, I'm gonna, you know, and then they leave LA. You've stuck with it.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I was thinking about this the other day, and I was having a conversation with a buddy of mine. You don't have to be here anymore, which is really fascinating. And you saw that happening these last few years, but pre and post pandemic, it's, you know, the days of when I first met you and we were in a casting office and going to audition for The Girl Next Door. And I still remember that vividly. I mean, it was.
Let's talk about that for a second. Tell the audience right now, like, what that, how that whole process went down. Do you remember that?
Well, so for me, this was my experience with it. This is, I have been acting since I was a little kid, right? And I'm from Fresno, California, where Jesus was born.
He was born there. That's what I heard.
Yeah, the whole thing, all of the biblical texts. It was actually in Fresno, California. But no, middle of California. Been acting. My mom was gracious enough and probably did more than I would have ever done for my kids by taking me to these auditions. So from like 12 to like 15, you know, especially if I book something, I'm going back and forth to LA, 4-hour drive, yada yada. So I stopped to play sports, have a high school life, moved back to L.A. at like 20. I was 20, and it was the first audition. I re-upped with my old agent and said, hey, I'm back. And she's like, well, you still acting? I'm like, yeah, of course. You know, here's some headshots. I don't even think I had, even before I went in there, I think they were still old. They were just old shit pictures, you know, that were didn't even – it's I still look the same, but it was old stuff. Anyway, first audition. She sends me to The Girl Next Door, and I go in. I didn't know anything about the project. I think at the time when I was – if I remember correctly, when I was auditioning for The Girl Next Door, it was – and I found this out after that audition, that first audition. But it was Mally Finn.
Mally. I didn't know who that was. Yeah, I know, right?
At the time.
And do you remember who her assistant was?
Yeah.
Who was it?
Olivia Wilde.
Olivia Wilde. Harry Styles' girl. Like, there's all this controversy right now that's going on with that whole slam dunk. But geez, like
a director of her first big film. And honestly, my experience on that set with her couldn't have been a bigger sweetheart. Couldn't have been nicer. At the time was doing shit where she's like, yeah, I'm not even, you know, the acting thing that wasn't on the frontal lobe of the brain for her, but that's the first person I see. So I go to this audition, Mally Finn, go into this audition. Olivia Wilde's the first person I see sitting at the desk, and she goes, oh, hey, sweetheart. She's like, hey, are you Brandon? And I was like, yeah, I'm Brandon. And she's like, okay, take a seat. Mally been with you in a few minutes.
That's what my friends call me.
And, you know, I go in there and, you know, I guess like anything else, the less you know, the better in a lot of circumstances. You know, you can disconnect from any of the jitters or like, oh, I got to make this one count. I don't even know how my agent got me in to the door, quite frankly. But the first time I read or saw Mally, it was all improv. She said, get rough with me. I knocked her over. This is no shit. I knocked her over a desk. She fell over a desk and got up and go. And I was like, oh my God, Mally, are you okay? Like, I'm sorry. And she's like, I'm fine. At least you're waking me up today. She's like, the first one that woke me up today.
Wait. You knocked her over the desk?
Knocked her over a desk.
Dude.
She fell over her desk.
Bro.
she fell over her desk and landed on the ground, and I'm on the other side of the desk, and I was like, oh, came around, and she's like, it's fine. She goes, I like it. I like the excitement. I like the energy, Brandon. And she goes, I mean that truly. And she's like, do it again. We did it again. I had fun, but I walked out of there going, hi, Olivia. She's like, hey, how did it go in there? She seemed like you guys are having fun. I was like, yeah. I walked out thinking, what am I doing with my life? I'm in LA. What am I doing with my life?
I just wasted a bunch of gas money to get here.
100%.
I just knocked the casting director out.
Yeah, exactly. And they called me back within that day. And
So when we met each other, was that the same day?
That was like three or four days later.
Okay, so it was pretty, you know, yeah, because I remember I went in, I met Olivia Wilde. Mm-hmm. I also was like, hi, are you the casting director? She's like, no, I'm just the assistant casting director. And I was like, wow, that's, hey, what's up? And then went in there, and I only auditioned with her. That was it. I auditioned with Olivia. Like, you know, like she was the casting director that day for me.
No way.
Yeah, and she's the one that said, we like this guy. She said that. And I remember Mally calling, like, they called my agency. I think I was, like, with freaking, like, ICM at the time. Or I was, like, mm-hmm. with, like, a really high profile. And, yeah. I was under contract, as you know, with, like, soaps and, you know, doing that sort of thing. Her thing to my manager was, once I got the call back, because like Olivia, I guess, clicked it over to Chuck Gordon and Luke, you know, as well, the director of the film, guys, Luke Greenfield. They basically said, are you sure you want to hire a guy that just got off a soap opera? That was their exact words. That's what they said.
That's what it was.
And, anyway, like, I guess, you know, I was able to, like, pass through. And then we meet each other in the casting room. And this is what we call a mix and match session. Mm-hmm. Now, so anybody who's unfamiliar with that that's listening to the podcast, a mix and match session is something where they go, they're not sure exactly who they want to put together. And we were what they called the second tripod, the guys that were going to be the proponents to Emil Hirsch's character, Paul Dano's character, Chris's character. And we're literally like, they're like, you know, we do this scene. I met you the first time in that room, bro.
Yeah. First time.
First time.
I mean, in the room, you guys were, I saw you outside, and I think I asked, like, hey, you're like, write it out of the way. I think you said like, yep, up those stairs. And I'd already been there, but that's the only words. And then we went in that room. That was the first introduction. It's like, let's do some improv and play.
Yeah. And we just were talking about, it's like, well, are we all going in doing this thing together? Let's try to make it fun for ourselves. And, you know, let's try to make any bits that we could possibly put together.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, man.
And Luke Greenfield, he looks at me and goes, I want to ask you a serious question, Jacob. Do you have any problem making out with really hot chicks? That's what he said in there. I was like,
remember that?
I was like, no.
how do I answer this one? Like, what do you want? What do you?
You can't say that. You can't say that in Hollywood anymore.
No. You can't. A lot of that stuff, even on that set, and not like it was crazy debaucherous stuff, but I mean, a lot of this stuff that was, those are olden time. Those are old days. Those are the old days. I mean, hell. You know, even right now, they're still doing pods to where it's like, hey, me, you, and anyone else, we might not have even have interacted with certain actors on that set as of today. There's certain projects right now where it's like, never saw them. We all kept our different distance because we're in, you know, certain pods for COVID. So, I mean, so much stuff changed, man. And, you know, it had been years since I had been on a big set. And that was, you know, that was a lot of time for a lot of people's careers, and a lot of things were going on at that time. It's hard to process, you know.
It really is.
What's at stake? What it's going to be? I mean, so from my understanding, when I had read for it the first time, and then we met each other a couple days later, maybe it was like a week and a half later or something, or maybe a few days. I don't know. But this was what I was told. I was told – Girl Next Door, before I even went in, I didn't know this. I was told someone had said, oh, you read for that movie? They're like, how'd you get that audition? I was like,
none of your damn business.
You know, none of your business, sir. And I was like, I'm coming here to take the town by storm. I've been here for 5 days. But Stu, what's his name? Who originally wrote the script? Blumberg. Stu Blumberg.
Yep.
It was a black script, or it was considered a very meaning it was a very in demand script in Hollywood for a period of time, and there was a lot of people, different people attached to it. So when I, after the first audition, they said Brad Pitt and Katie Holmes. So that was my report back to my roommates. I lived with seven girls. I lived with my old buddy from high school and seven girls in Burbank at the time.
What do you mean? Brad Pitt and Katie Holmes. What do you mean by that?
That's what I was told, who was originally attached to
play high school students?
Brad Pitt was going to be the
Oliphant's Tim Oliphant's character, which I could see.
Yeah.
I could totally see.
Katie Holmes
see
was the girl next door.
Oh, man. Katie Holmes getting down with it. I could see that. Actually, but I don't know, like Alicia Cuthbert, she was able to she brought it.
She brought it, absolutely. And at the time, it went from – it just went through a lot of different changes and a lot of different – from my understanding. But that was, you know, that was the thing when I didn't know anything about anything was I was hearing Brad Pitt, Katie Holmes, you know, and – it was, you know, of course, everything changes as it does in Hollywood. Or honestly, my first experiences of booking anything major when I was younger, I learned real quick that when I would go back in elementary school or junior high and tell everyone, hey, I'm going to be on this, I would just have my heart ripped out for me. A couple months later, like, what happened? You know, I could think of three different things. And you've been on Broadway, so you know one of them was Big, the musical. I was pissed, you know. I thought I had booked it. And
by the way, Brandon is an incredible singer, guys. If you don't know this about him, you need to, like, dive deep. He is an incredible singer. That's one thing that we originally, from day one, once we were on set together, I was like, wow, dude, you have a repertoire that went – way back, like, that I would never expect. And I thought I was, like, the deep musician at that point. And you just blew my mind.
Well, same. You know, we bonded over that stuff, bonded over the music. And
Jack Black is what I remember we bonded over.
Yeah, man.
I was like, have you heard Tenacious D? He's like, have I heard Tenacious D? I know every freaking song from Tenacious D.
Yeah, and you did. And I remember, you know what? And I still tell this story. And this is a no shit. And this is like, it still trips me out. I can remember it vividly. It was like day one on set. And you're talking about this iPod thing.
Oh, yeah. And, those things. Do we remember those? iPods.
iPods. And you go like, check this out. You had one and you were showing me like, and I didn't get it. Like, I remember it vividly. But I went to your trailer and you're like, check this out. And then you showed it to me and you're like, kind of like, ta-da. You're like, what do you think? And I was like, what? Like, you're like, all right. So this has over 1,000 songs on it. And I was like, uh-huh. And then you're like, 1,000 songs. So multiple dozens. You could put hundreds of albums on this. And I was like, okay. And you're like, you don't need the CD. You're just walking me through it. And I remember thinking in my head, I was like, there's no fucking way that this is going to catch on. I was like, this doesn't make any sense to me. And it just was so vivid. And then it was like right around that time, and I'm also behind the times too, so it probably was already a thing. But in my brain of not being plugged in, I thought in my head if I was a gambling man or if I was betting on stocks, I would have been like, that will never take off. This company, Apple, they had their day with the Oregon Trail video game. That's all computers will eventually be used for. This company, Apple, is never gonna do anything. But that's vivid. It's day one.
I actually remember you were sitting in the car with me, and I was like, what do you think about this thing? I remember showing you that. But that was just like – that was champagne problems. That was a totally different deal. I was like – I had – at that point, I mean, you know, I was working a lot, and I was really lucky to be working on this film with you. And guys – I had too much money, and I was like, I bought this newfangled device they called the iPod, and nobody had it, and it was like 4 inches thick.
Yeah, it was thick. Yeah, it was a white one. It was all big and thick. It didn't have like it could probably only hold what is it? Whatever the 2,000 songs or
it's like you met your limit. You're done. Yeah. You're done.
And you did. I remember scrolling through it, and I was like, oh, we got similar taste in music. We got the same taste. But I think it did. I think, and that's what you're saying. You're like, yeah, I maxed out. And it was, you know, it was just such a time. It was such a trip.
It is such a trip. You know? And my daughter, she actually just recently, she's in the third grade. And she recently found my iPod. I'm not even kidding.
And it still works.
I have not plugged it in. I don't have the charger for it. I'm daring myself to go online, buy the charger that will actually work and dump all that music into a file, which I should really do because there's some STP stuff in there and like talking about grunge rock and like all that stuff. But she's like, Dad, can you get the charger? And I'm like, really? Yeah. I was like, yeah, I can do it. I can do it. Yeah. I'll figure it out. I guarantee you there's going to be some stuff. I'm like, whoa, I can't believe I have this music. Brandon, I want to ask you, these are great freaking memories. They're so awesome. But what are some of your memories that stuck with you, like working on, like now it's on Netflix. I mean, it's everywhere. It's become cult classic. I mean, I don't need to say any more. The Girl Next Door is a cult classic film. What are some of your funny moments or some of your memories that you know, that stick out and you go, dang, that was great.
Well, there's a lot, and they all jumble together. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things. I remember one thing, and what I remember picking up on, and I think it was like day three, right? Is first off, I'm a smoker, right? And I never. Before that point, I never touched a cigarette. I used to play baseball and would chew tobacco and stuff. So I was quitting that when I moved to LA and getting the Jones. And as soon as I got to that set, I'm like, I'm so nervous. I need to fit in. And then there's a bunch of people smoking on set. So I was like, I got to go buy a pack of cigarettes. Never looked back from that, first off.
So, okay, so you are still a smoker to this day?
Ish. Okay. I go through periods.
I'm not crushing on you. It's so like now we have vapes. We got, but tobacco has been something that you that's one of your things.
Thanks, Girl Next Door. Thanks being on a big, big movie set.
Chuck Gordon. That was how it started. You're welcome.
but what I remember is like day three. I remember on set and you're trying to put it all together. So I was trying to watch about how a movie is made, right? Or like, trying to refresh myself because when you're a kid, you're younger, I would get on something bigger. I'm not looking at that stuff. I'm just trying to do my things, talk to the other kids, whatever they have me do. But so I was trying to like soak it in and, you have a lot of downtime doing anything, whether it's supporting or lead, there's always downtime on set. So I was trying to soak it up. And I remember watching Chris Marquette.
Yeah.
And throughout the whole process of the movie. And I remember thinking, and I don't know if it was Luke, I said something to Luke and there was someone else that I know we probably talked about it. But there was someone else and they're like, that kid's a pro. It's like, that's where you want to try and be there.
He said that to you.
I'm trying to remember who it was, but it was something. I don't know if it was.
Wasn't me. Producers. It wasn't me.
It was. I remember they said that they're like, that's where you want to be. I was like, yeah, they remember him saying, oh, yeah, he's a 1-2 take wonder. There you go.
Yeah. I remember the conversation that stood out to me about Chris was he's the next John Cusack.
Yeah.
That's what I kept hearing over and over again on repeat he's John Cusack. He's John Cusack.
He's John Cusack, and it looked just like him, especially at that time. But I remember 3 days in, I was watching him. He's hitting his marks, but what literally happened is we're smoking a cigarette. I'm a new smoker to the game, smoking with Chris.
Not dipping.
Sorry, I'm spoiler alert.
Not tipping at this point.
the what?
Not dipping at this point.
But he literally puts out the cigarette, goes and shoots this scene, and I'll just assume it was the prom because I feel like that was a lot of the first stuff we shot.
It was.
I think we were in tuxes.
We were.
I could be wrong on that memory, but he literally puts it down and he's like, "Watch this for a second." Goes back, does three takes, hits all, and this was a physical thing, so he hits all of his marks. And he's back within like 15 minutes. And Luke's like, hey, man, I think we got it, man. That's great. That's great. I just remember watching him thinking like, yeah, that's he's able to bring it pretty quick. And it's like, how do you do that? How do you stay calm or stay present enough? I just remember watching him and thinking, huh, he's a little killer, this Chris Marquette. That was one thing that stands out to me.
Yeah.
Also, you know what else? Just how important everyone is on that set, because there were some shakeups in that movie.
How so?
Halfway through,
Oh, well, there was.
There were shakeups.
There was some shakeups, and I don't know if many people know about that story, how that went down. We didn't sign a non-disclosure agreement on this.
Yeah, man, to be honest with you, though, I don't even remember.
I remember exactly how it went down.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm the one who probably shook it up a little bit.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, and me too. Me too. And I think that something.
I remember there was a director of photography that was disagreeing with our director, Luke. And you guys got to remember, Luke Greenfield is working with Chuck Gordon. Now, Chuck Gordon is Field of Dreams, October Sky. I mean, we're talking about some of the most classic films. And anybody who doesn't know what a director of photography does, that is somebody that's like, they're really basically the director can say, I want to see this, and I want to see it at this time of night. I want it to look like this. It's going to be a two shot. We're going to run a any kind of trolley up to them. I don't know. Like, however they see it fit, they're doing that. But apparently the DP on this movie, and there's no names that we're going to mention, but I think Brandon is on the same wavelength. But I remember it was the scene where my character is going in to give Alicia Cuthbert, you know, like try to make the move at the party. And they have this trolley that's going around. They spent probably 3-4 hours just lighting this one scene. David Gray's This Year's Love Better Last is playing in the scene. So go back, watch that scene, check it out. But I remember very clearly at that point that that DP disagreed. And this is shit stuff that happens on set. It does. It just is what it is. But yeah. But you never let the actors know that you're having a disagreement with the director, let alone the producer. And I felt right away, like when I heard him say, like, this guy has no idea what he's doing. I heard that. This DP said that. And that bothered me because Luke was the one that hired me, right? He saw something in me. He hired you, too, Brandon. And that really bothered me that we had this big discommunication mid-film. This is like, we're 2 months into this project. This is a $20 million Fox Searchlight film.
Yeah. Plus.
It went way over budget, way over what they, but you know, we're going to talk a couple about some of those things too. But homie goes, this guy has no idea what he's doing. I can't believe this guy. He just kept telling me and berating Luke to my ear. And I just said to myself, I said, I need to let Luke know this. I need to let him know, because that's not how a team works together on a film. And if somebody is already filming this way, are they going to sabotage the film? Because now my name is on it. Brandon, your name's on it. Timothy Oliphant's name is on it. Emil Hirsch, Paul Dano, Chris Marquette. You know, all these guys, they're all there. And like, I'm like, I need to let them know. So I heard this guy say this. I was like, hey, man, I just want you to know. He's saying this to the actors. He said it to me before I was getting ready to shoot this scene. And that's where she comes in, and I try to lay one, and then Emil Hirsch rushes in and kisses her. And this all was happening during this time. This guy was losing his shit, and I felt my duty to say something. And I would, if I was directing a movie, I would hope that somebody would have the courage, or, you know, to say the same thing. So are we on the same page with that? Is that what
you're saying? Same page. And this wasn't the first. There was other things, other bad attitudes, and that's what I remember. That's what I remember. And also, that was right before we took a hiatus for a period of time, for like a month, I want to say.
Yeah, there was time.
And then we came back, and he's gone. He was gone, and there was some other people who were maybe in his team or whatever, residuals of that as well. But I remember thinking that one bad attitude, and that there was other things that I remember leading up to that, right? That wasn't just an overall bad attitude. It does take, especially on any set, everyone on that effing set, I mean everyone, serves a role and is important. And if you have a couple of shitty people, it can mess everything up. It happens time and time again.
It can ruin the entire film.
Yeah.
The entire film. It could just destroy it.
Yeah. And that's what I remember thinking. I'd heard people say that, you know, and you hear, you know, whatever, you know, it only takes one, you know, we're all a unit, and you hear that shit, but you do see it. And I did. Those are some of that. That was a big lesson that I learned as well, that like, yeah, it can really derail. It spills off, you know, you seeing it, you're thinking about it in a deeper way than I would have even known how to think about it, you know, at the time. But seeing all the residual effects of what it means, you know, how important everyone is on that set. And there was a lot of people, man, again, old and look, and what I've, and since then, and big or small budget sets, there's a lot of people. But even then, now I feel like you're not always going to get those big sets that
anymore.
It's not like that anymore.
That's a rarity.
It's a rarity.
Dude, what we had and what we got to play with and be there, dude, That just doesn't happen. Now they're hiring local hire. It's all like, oh, we're going to be shooting in Oklahoma. The rest of the cast is going to be Oklahoma based.
100%.
With no names, 100%. No LA representation, none of that. So what we were able to do on that film was a rarity. I remember that day though, because I remember coming back to set and Luke goes, Jacob, I want to talk to you. Come over here.
Yeah.
And he goes, by the way, that DP has been fired. And I was like, oh no, I'm so sorry. And he's like, no, don't be sorry. You know, it needed to happen. We were already having those problems and he should not be doing that. So what most people don't know is that movie, halfway through the middle of it, a brand new director of photography was assigned to the film. One that got along with Chuck Gordon, one that got along with Luke Greenfield, and they saved the day. I mean, you watch the film, guys. I have to say, Brandon, you know, once the movie came out, I was living in New York City, and I went to a theater that was just down off of, like, I don't know, it's 84th in Amsterdam, I believe. It was just like by this little French restaurant, but they had a little theater there, and it was gonna be in the theater right there in New York City. I'm like, it's just three blocks down from my place. It's coming out. I can't believe this. I went and watched the movie, and the movie came out, and it had a modest box office, but it wasn't too like I don't know, 3-4 months later, I'm in London. I'm in England. I couldn't meet anybody without them knowing this movie. It was a massive success in the UK. Massively successful. I mean, they were like they didn't know anything about me before that movie, but I'd be out there like, mate, you're from the girl next door. Oh, mate. Like, it was just on and on and on. They were like, wow. I was like, wow, I had no idea, because it was not really doing. But now it's become quite a little phenom. And speaking about I want to ask you.
No, it's crazy. Well, it's crazy, man. And also, real quick to speak to that is, you have that's my buddy Richard. He decides to cross now. You also have Passion of the Christ. It came out
same time.
Yeah. Same weekend. Passion of the Christ.
How do you compete against that?
It's there's so many things that lined up, and you know, I guess the olden days now, which aren't that old. I mean, look, with the last 2 years, you know, streaming platforms and everything else, is all these things to consider. The overseas markets, which now it's all, you know, everything has changed, and that came out at that time. They pushed it, the movie, because it came out in March. My birthday is March 5th. It came out, was supposed to come out like that weekend or the weekend after my birthday. They pushed it to, you know, a little bit later, but it came out with Passion of the Christ. And I think they held it. I don't even know what the other movie is. There was a strategic reason. And I remember saying they were going to release it on that weekend of Passion of the Christ. And I remember thinking, well, that's a mistake, because that's going to get all of the churches. It's a Mel Gibson film. There's never a right time. But anyway,
was this before or after the whole like Mel Gibson Jewish like incident? Do you remember? Was it after the release of The Passion of the Christ that he had that whole meltdown in Malibu?
No, it would have been before, I believe. I might be wrong on that. I think it was before, though.
It's
because 2003, 2004. Then there were. It was before, not too long after that. I think it was before.
Yeah, it wasn't too long after that, because he was getting so much backlash, and then all of a sudden, of course, he spouted out, and he did, you know, damage to his own career. But let me ask you this. How have you personally grown all these years later? We're talking about The Girl Next Door. We're reminiscing. We're having a wonderful time. But how have you grown since the ages of The Girl Next Door?
It's funny, and sometimes I feel like my relationship – to acting, to this life that we chosen has been, it's been a dance, man. And there's been, I've also lived in two different worlds, kind of back and forth.
How so?
In career worlds where, I mean, I'm a sales guy and at heart always, I mean, we all are, you are, you
hey,
know,
we're the vacuum cleaner and the vacuum cleaner salesman.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Exactly. And for you youngsters that are out there that are listening to it, I know you don't even understand what a vacuum cleaner is. Like, you're like, oh, is that the electric thing that plugs into the wall? But exactly. There used to be people that would come to our doors and sell the vacuum cleaner to our parents. Do you remember those days, Brandon?
Yeah. I do.
And that's what I mean when I say the vacuum cleaner salesman. It's like you're your own best product.
And that's – well, I mean, and for me, you know, I've done that dance and have continued to do that dance. Maybe there's also an element of detriment to that too, right? Because you also have to embrace – all of it, what acting means, what this is. And this is a long haul thing, and there's highs and there's lows. And so I've been to answer your question. What I've learned is, and for anyone that's out there wanting to choose this life, is I would say, I don't recommend that, you know, but
hey, stop staring off your competition, man. Take it easy on them.
But it's true, because you have to realize that there's, and even so now we're talking about the next couple of years too. So back in the day when we would go out for stuff, right, you get, even what we were talking about earlier is, and especially when I was younger, I would know with my type, I'm going in the room, there's 50 kids. And I know, I'm most of the time 50, maybe 100 kids, right? We'll say 100. There's 100 kids.
Easily.
100 kids. I know 40 of those I never see in those rooms. And I'm not saying it's because I was some hot shit acting, you know, kid actor. But let's be honest. I know that 40 of those kids, I've never seen them in the callback rooms. So let's get rid of them. I know these 60 kids. I do see some of these guys occasionally in that room. Okay, so then they're down to 60. I know who I see time and time again. If I'm getting to the next level of those 60 kids, I see 30 of these same dudes.
Yeah.
And then I know if I've ever gotten close to anything else, I see the
same guys.
Five kids.
And they're all like, the same shit, dudes. There's Brandon again.
Yeah. We all know each other. Or we all know, like, if we don't know each other, we're like, yeah, how's it going? They're like, where's the sign-in sheet? They're like, oh. Like sign-in sheet?
Sign-in
like,
sheet. Oh, yeah. It's up your butt. Oh, yeah.
It's up your butt, stupid idiot. You think you're cool? You think you're like
– oh, by the way, genuine? I heard she's in a bad mood today. Like they're always like trying to like get you off balance. Like,
yeah.
They're like – because you're down to the wire at that point.
They're like, good luck. Like, yeah. Good luck in there.
She didn't even like anything I said. And you're like, oh, okay. And then you walk out and you're like, wow, she couldn't have been nicer. You
know, and so – yeah, they're like, that was a completely – well, that's the other thing too. Dude, you just said it, is that you got to listen to advice, but ultimately at the end of the day, I think I was – I forget what I was listening to the other day, but they said like some actor was talking about how he asked his other acting friend – oh, it was a Ewan McGregor interview. He goes – he said his one of his cousins or someone was in the original Star Wars in a character, and he was asking him about taking – this role of Obi-Wan Kenobi. And well, he was asking him,
you got to do it in the accent, first of all.
He's just doing this thing with Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I asked him, I said, you know, do you have any advice I don't know if I should take the job or not. And he's, you know, but he says, yeah, I don't know, man. I didn't have a good experience originally. It's a lot of pressure. If I were you, or something along the lines of, I don't know, you might want to think about it, it's a lot of pressure. Of course, if he's going up for the role of Obi-Wan, he'd be like, you know, it's so you have to be careful what everyone's experiences are different. You can't take things personally, because you know how many jobs that I got where, if I'm being honest, I didn't do that great of a job in that room. But then later on, when you book the job, come to find out the director or producer is showing you a picture and they're like, man, my best friend that died of bone cancer, his name was Brandon too. Here's a picture of him. And you're like, that looks just like me. Yeah. You know, now it all makes sense. And they love you, you know, or someone, you know, you look like it, you look like someone, all these things that are out of your control.
Yeah.
The only thing you have to do is chase, hopefully get an opportunity to chase down stories that you're excited and fired up about. And that's it. You know, you chase things and your own content too. That's the world we live in now, is like, you have big dog friends, you have small dog friends, you have people that know that they'll show up, and you guys are create, and you guys are excited on the same page to collaborate on something. Go and do it, because you can make it yourself now. You Word. Literally can.
I hear that. Totally.
You know?
Yeah, 100%. Brother, when you were, like, recently, you played Kit Carson, and you were able to play him in the show Montana. What did you learn about him that we might not know historically? Is there some things that stood out to you playing that role?
Man, there's a lot. Well, first off, Kit Carson, you have a period in history that there's a great book that I recommend anyone read it. It's called Blood and Thunder by Hampton Sides. And I'm always saying, and have been saying, that, man, these are unprecedented times, man. The amount of change that is going on in the world is just it's never been like this. This amount of change and technology and everything that's moving as fast. Well, that's not true. It's all relative and in context. From 1809 to, you know, 1860, I mean, the United States doubled in size with the Louisiana Purchase. There's this whole world, and you know, and you could speak to this deeply too, Jacob. Like, you know about this stuff, is that the whole dream of us buying from the French $7 million worth of $7 million to double the size of the continental United States.
Yeah, I mean, like, in like 19 states in that purchase or whatever it was.
You Crazy. Know, and so these frontiersmen that we've all heard their names, some of them we know more than others, but it was just an insane time of change, of expansion, of just absolute risk that a lot of people endured and died for, just trying to explore these areas, you know. And Kit Carson, I hadn't known, I'd heard the name, but I didn't really know what he had done and kind of where he was in how he fit into all of this. And I just learned a lot, really, about, you know, that period of history, you know, of all the stuff, your Daniel Boones and, you know, the all these names we've heard, your Jim Bridgers and all this stuff.
Sure.
I did a lot of research and went to go actually see a lot of these places. And it's just an incredible time in history that –
What have you learned about yourself playing those characters?
That's a good question. You know what I learned, and we did a second season of the show, and they want to do some other things with it as well. I learned that, especially on a set, you know, sometimes you have your people that. And especially before I got into it, is like, even now, and having done it and know how it goes, is you think there's a stunt person for everything. You're right. Look, they didn't do that, or they didn't, you know, it's a lot of work. It's not that much fun being on a set a lot of the times, you know, it's not.
Speak about that for a second for our audience that doesn't know what that's like.
Okay. So Jacob, and you know, when your family or any friend or anyone's in town, it lines up and you're filming something, they're like, come check it out. What do? They're like, wow, man, so cool. Super pumped for tomorrow. Super ready. Like, can't wait, man. This is going to be sick. And then they get there. They're like, wow, awesome. Snap a couple pictures. And then about an hour and a half goes by right before you need to focus on something. They come up to you and they're like, Jacob, hey. And you're like, hey, man, I'm about to do my thing here. And you're like, hey, is it okay? Where's the craft services if they haven't already found it? Where's the craft services, the food located? Or is it cool if I leave? And you're like, yeah, it's fine. Food's over there. Go grab yourself some food, take it for the road. And yeah, they're like, yeah, just, you know, I want to go do other things, because you're waiting around
all day. Like, you're pumped. I totally get what you're saying. Like, and then, like, they're like, okay, so we're getting ready to transport you to the location right now, and we're going to get you there, and then we're breaking for dinner.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, you go, wait. So I could have stayed in my trailer. I mean, and now I've got to sit out here and it's like 4 o'clock in the morning. Like what is going on? This was The Walking Dead. I was like, got this beautiful trailer, custom, so nice. I was like, dang, I don't think I'll ever get a nicer trailer than this one, but it's awesome for the 2 minutes I got to stay in there. And they're like, We're transporting you. Get ready, get ready, get ready. And then we just like got ready for 9 hours. Like, and then it's like dinner. I'm like, it's not dinner, it's breakfast. It's like 4 a.m.
Dinner. And then like, Jacob, we need you in hair and makeup now. Everything's like, we need you now.
Right.
And then
now.
It's like, we need you so you can wait so that we can break for breakfast dinner. You know?
Yeah.
It's cue to 4 o'clock in the morning.
It's not romantic. I mean, we get romanticized. We romanticize about this, guys. It's really not the romantic process that you actually think it could be. So it's like sometimes it's just, you know, you have this idea that every time you get on set, it's going to be like, oh, wow, I get to work with this person, see this person, hang out. It's a dream come true. But it's really it's a lot more than you think you can, you know. I don't know. It's like it's just way more things that are going on. I always call it organized chaos. You have 15,000 jobs running at each other at 100 miles an hour and people yelling at them the whole time. And somehow by the time they say, rolling camera, all right, everything's rolling, we're rolling. Everything is there. It's ready to go. And then the stress level just goes from like 0 to 500 like miles an hour.
Yeah. 100%. Well, and that's the other thing that's what I've learned in Montana, or I think on this, I don't think I've ever been as busy where I'm in every scene. I don't have a day. I mean, I don't have a minute. I really barely have a lunch because by then they have to get me back to set. So you're there watching them piece everything together, as opposed to here's my big scene that I'm on set, or the pivotal scenes. You're psyching yourself up and it's hurry up and wait with what, you know, like it's always hurry up and wait. And it does to keep up that energy, regardless of what part you're playing, like you got to do some push-ups. You got to get inside. You got to wake up.
Drink like 4 cups of coffee, whatever's on. It's true.
Whatever it is. So I was also seeing that this summer and last summer is, I mean, I'm there. I really can't walk too far from wherever scenes we're shooting or base camp. It was very physically, it was like 13-hour days, you know, on horses, doing all kinds of stunts and stuff. And they could step in where it got crazy, but a lot of this stuff, you know, doing a good amount of it, and there is some danger involved because you can't.
Well, you're on horseback.
Yeah.
You're riding horses. Have you had experience riding horses before this?
I did. So when I booked this thing, they had reached out to me, or they had asked me, and they're like, what's your, you know, can you ride horses? And I'm like, well, yes. Yes. Yes, I can.
I can also ice skate. I figure skate.
Yeah, that same shit. There's just stuff that everyone has where it's those things where it's like, oh, can you really do that? What experience do you really have? So that was – I had a little bit of riding experience because my family, they're in the road – all women who ride that were professionally were in rodeos.
Barrel racing?
And still compete.
Like, yep. Awesome, man. That's rad.
Yeah. Still do it. And badasses. So I was able to, like, lock in and be like, hey, Jess, hey – Daddy needs to get on a horse again. You think you can maybe queue up some lessons, cuz? Like, what's going on? You know, and so I was able to do that and like cram it in for till like I knew for 4 months that I was gonna be doing. But you know, it's like what she said. Oh, and then they sent me a thing. They go, after I booked it, they're like, which still is BS to this day. They're like, what do you think? What are your horse riding abilities? On a scale of
like a star rating, right? Like you're like, is it a 4 or 5?
it was his metric that whatever the scale was. I Googled it immediately upon sending the email, and I could find it nowhere on any. There's no whatever they sent me the scale. So I was like,
you're like five stars.
I'm a six.
out of five.
A six. Yeah, no, it was a 6 out of 8, and I was like, top 6, meaning not a pro.
But like, but you from. Are, you are like, you can ride horses and handle them. Yeah. Well, who's Thanks. Not going to say that? First of all, like you're going, you know, we're all going to do that. We're going to be like, yeah, okay. Mountain biking. Shoot, last time I did that, the triples. I mean, like that was like 10 years ago, but I can do it. I think still. Are we gonna have a stunt double for this? Okay, cool, exactly. Cool. But they want those people that can do that. And I've been in that situation too. But I grew up with horses. But I think that's rad though, because you look like a natural on these I saw the photos there, dude. You look. You transport Kit Carson, like, right back.
Yeah, and you know what? From having done it in the past, you do plug in, and then I told my cousin specifically, because a couple of them, they have ranches, they have a nice spread, they still ride competitively, and I told them what I was doing. They started laughing, and they're like, you'll be fine. And I was like, I need to learn X, Y, and Z like in 4 months. And she's like, it doesn't work like that. She's like, remember when you used to ride? She's like, what you got to do is get on this thing as much as you can, always from here on out. And she's like, that's it. That's the only advice. Just ride as much as you can. And I can show you some basics, but you're either going to queue up on it or not. And she, you know. I actually, when I showed up, I was surprisingly one of the better riders there, and they had people to help us and help the stars ride. But I was pretty comfortable, and then the second go round, super, super comfortable. But it's like anything else. I also hadn't ridden 4 months or for a 5 month period in between the seasons that we shot. You got to ride all the time, but it is like, I don't want to say it's like riding a bike because it's not. But the funny thing is what I did learn about the West, how the West was won. Most of these guys, and I gotta say, in the second season I rode horses primarily, but all these frontiersmen, they didn't ride horses. Most of them discovered all these uncharted territories on mules. So they rode mules. That's what they preferred. And a mule, man, I had this mule Roy. You could barely tell it was. It looked just like a horse. People thought it was a horse. It was a mule.
It was a big season. What do they call it? Packing mule, probably. You could haul like an elk on the backside of it, like if you went hunting, and you could have like an elk on it, and he will still ride you down. But they're huge. They're tall, big, stern animals.
Little bit slower, but not much to what you think, you know. And they will, if you bond with it. I mean, that thing. What I was riding first season. I fell in love with it. We can go anywhere. And in fact, we did on a few occasions.
We fell in love together. You guys started taking on each other on vacation. What the hell's happening?
What I mean, Jacob, is we took trips. We took, we went to Catalina Island. Roy the Mule.
Yeah. And, yeah. It was beautiful. Great. It's a beautiful spot, especially for a nice couple like yourselves.
No, seriously,
animal bonding is incredibly powerful. Like, I mean, anybody who's out there that knows and have been around horses or a mule or an animal that like that, there's a beautiful. I've got a friend, Oba Bubba Tunde's, Tony Award winning dancer, Dream Girls. He's been on every single series. He's been on the podcast. He's a horse whisperer. He actually talks to horses, and it's unreal, this guy. He's everybody goes, well, you're black. You're a cowboy? He's like, I'm not only a cowboy, but I actually can talk to horses. What can you do? And it just it blows my mind. I'm like, and he can tap dance like nobody's business. Like, I have my daughter's like, she's all into tap dancing right now. So I'm like, wait till you see Oba Bubba Tunde.
He's going to blow your mind. He's going to blow your mind, Molly.
Yeah.
Your mind will be blown.
Plays Sammy Davis Jr., great, great actor.
Well, one thing to that real quick is and I have – she's right here, but I've never had a dog before until about 2 years ago. I always liked animals, right? No one's like, I hate animals, but I'll be honest. I wasn't like, someone wants to show me all the pictures of their dog. I go, wow, what a cute dog. Or if I go over to my friend's house or family's house, it's like, oh, great dog. Hey, buddy. And then now get off me. Skedaddle. Daddy's wearing his nice clothes. Like, that's, you know, there's a limit. I never had owned a dog until I was a kid. You know, my dad's dog, hunting dog. We grew up hunting. Okay. So I had a beagle. He wasn't mine, though. He's my dad's.
Yeah.
And I loved him. Yada, yada. But now I own a wiener dog, and I got her when she was a baby.
Is that a Dachshund? A Dachshund?
A Dachshund.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dachshund.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dachshund. Release the Dachshunds. Which the Nazis would use these dogs, by the way. That's a, you know, that was a thing.
Oh, did they? I mean, they're hunting dogs, right? Like, they were like, they're ground dogs. Like, I feel like, I don't know. I mean, I know, like, I have a couple short hair pointers, and I know they're like, they're hunting dogs. But what were the Dachshunds a hunting dog too?
Dachshunds were they're burrowers, so they were hunting dogs. But I mean, my understanding, you know, they're just they can be yappy. Mine's pretty quiet, but they're really yappy, and they're good at identifying.
Oh,
finding things.
Yeah,
you know, burrowing. So they would take, you know, they use them in that capacity, hunting, if you will, and they. But my point was is that I had never. I got her when she was a little baby, and so about 9 months later, I had to go film and be around horses and be around. They pick up on that, man. So I bonded, and some of the handlers and people are like, you know, these horses, this mule, really bond quick, and you're pretty good. You know, you build a relationship with them. They trust you. And I swear to God, it was because of that dog. You know, it's like they could feel this energy or this vibration that my mind was blown, that I don't think I've ever loved anything as much as I've loved this dog. I don't have children. I now get it for all you fathers out there. I'm telling all my buddies who are dads, and they're like, yeah, dude, when do you have an actual human child? Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of get it now. You know, but it made it everything better. And I think it's because of the – and plus when they're like crying and we're doing those things, I'm just thinking about my dog for the, you know, the 15 days I'm not around her, you know.
Yeah.
It just
I feel bad because I've got three dogs, and I've got three kids, and I feel like anymore I'm like, I'm not giving the dogs enough attention, and then like some of them are just like, they can't, like, I can't give one without the other two, or I have to like separate them. I'll keep them out back, and one can come in, and I'm like I'm totally ignoring the other stepchildren. Like, it's a horrible situation, and I'm like, but at the same time, like, they're family, man. They become your children. They are your children. They're everything. And they, the way they sit and they look at you, and they're just waiting for you to come to them and say, what's up? It's their children. They're the same deal. I get it. Brother, show business is a roller coaster, as you know. We talked a little bit about this. How do you stay mentally grounded with all the peaks and the valleys of our industry?
I think you got to fill up always with anything. You have to fill your life up with things that bring you joy, that are a different skill set. I hate that word hobbies, because it's like hobby. It's my hobby. It's okay. Everything's a hobby, right? You're learning a new skill every day. If you literally something new every day. But everything, we're like sponges, right? Human beings. And we tend to look at things under this context of like, oh, well, this will further my skills. That list we're talking about with I'm a five on the motocross. You know, it's like all for that. But it's like, no, that's the secret, is have other shit going on in your life and never stop doing and chasing stories and never stop doing it, right? Because you don't know. There's no blueprint. You don't know, and there's been time and time. Jack Nicholson was, what, 41 when he hit Easy Rider? Mm-hmm. He'd been in Roger Corman movies for 12, 13 years. By all intents and purposes, a failure. You know, he's the guy doing the Roger Corman movies.
Yeah.
Gets a shot. He's 41 years old, you know? And you got to do it because you love it. And that's and that changes, too. That can be fleeting. And if you're not enjoying it anymore, or you feel like your back's up against the wall – or there's all these things that run through and are going to be part of the stew during the process of it, but you got to be enjoying it and you got to fill your life up with other things, you know, and also chase the stories that you don't have to, you know, you chase the stories that you care about, you know, that, that's also a luxury too, right? Because it's like work, it's like life. You don't always get to do things, stories, things that you want, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, it's, you got to fill your life up with other things and you can't ever stop. I was going to tell you a little bit earlier, and this goes with what we're talking about. I did stop. I stopped for like about a year and a half, and I've always done theater. I like plays. I like musicals too, but I'm a play guy. I love plays. I love that stuff. I try to, you know, that's where really the action that I used, people used to say that, oh, it's a theater, it's a theater. Well, it's great because it's the one thing where the story starts in the beginning of the play, end of play. We know the journey of that, not the last scene first scene last, the big crying scene day one. You know, it's the linear thing, and it's a joy to be a part of that. But you I was going somewhere with this. I ramble.
Well, I'm hanging on every word, first of all, because I asked you, like, you know, we how is it, like, how do you stay mentally grounded through the process of these ups and downs that are in this crazy industry? And you said so many wonderful things that any actor, aspiring actor, can relate to. But you also took it to another level about, like, your own personal experience when you were doing this play. And how did that affect you?
Well, you realize what – you realize the work that's involved, and you realize what all this is, right? If there's 20 people in the audience or there's 200 people in the audience, whatever it is, it's how you feel afterwards. And it's even talking about on sets that aren't always fun, it's – you got to have fun doing it, and also it's work, and you have to realize it's work too. It's not always going to be fun, and it's filled, like life, with anything else, rejections, ups, downs, things that are out of your control. It's not something that you can always say, look, here's my painting, here's my sculpture. It's not like that. Yeah. And I remember I quit, was miserable for about a year and a half because I wasn't doing theater. Brandon, I wasn't acting.
Brandon, how competitive is it?
Oh, it's now?
I mean, when we were kids and now. I mean, and just give me a couple sentences. How competitive is it? How was it? What is it now, like now?
Old days, couple people. Maybe you lived in L.A., New York, major city, major markets. You're going against
a short
maybe
list.
Maybe a couple hundred people. Nowadays, short lists. Yeah, people who have representation. They fit the mold. Nowadays, no one knows what they want, and you can go up against 2,000 people, and they'll close out the submissions in 2 minutes. They're like, we got 2,000 hits. You can be anywhere in the world doing it. You know, that's been my experience lately, and maybe you've had a different experience, but you got to get in there fast, you know, and you're going up against people from all over the place, which is a good and bad thing.
That, I mean, yeah, it's no more localized. It's not localized anymore. It's everywhere. It's nationwide. I mean, that's what I guess I was getting at. It's like, I want people to understand that the competition has become more fierce. Because, you know, look, we all love entertainment. We all like watching our favorite shows. We like seeing our favorite movies. And now we have 16,000 platforms to choose from to do that with. And we go, oh, you didn't see it on AMC Plus? You didn't? You mean you don't have Disney Plus Plus? Like, I feel like
you don't have Plus Plus Disney? You know, Extreme?
I don't have the Disney Extreme experience. I'm sorry, but I feel like,
wait,
you know,
dude, you don't have Disney Extreme Plus Plus. You have children. What's going on?
I know. I feel like I'm neglecting them now because they only have iPads, phones, they've got all the other platforms, but they don't have Disney Plus Plus Extreme. I'm a bad dad.
You're not being a good dad, and yeah, they're suffering because of that, you know, all of the extra content. Yeah, you can see all the Disney stuff, but unless you have Extreme, I mean, can you see Andor 2? Did you even know it was out, Jacob? Did you even know Andor, Obi-Wan Extreme is out? You didn't, because you don't have it.
I don't have it. I do not have it. Brother, I spoke last week about men, how men can be like guilty of bottling up their like problems, not asking for the help that they might need or sharing their worries. We all have needs in our lives and we all have an ability to be macho and strong, but this can also lead to like health issues, you know, mental health issues. Are you good at sharing your problems, asking for help?
I'll say this, that this is my own personal experience, and this is something that funny you bring this up, because it's probably time to ask for more help, because men, humans, tend to have this thing where you can just push through it, right? Human beings, you're a man, you're like, I'm just going to push through it. I'm going to push through this with head down. And sometimes, you know, you don't need to talk about it. You need to move on. This was like for the last 80 years of dads that would come home and drink the scotch and then their kids ended up hating them. It's this vicious cycle, blah, blah, blah. But everyone, it's not always enough for your friends and your family, because that's the thing that I've been saying for years is I got my friends. I got my family. If I have some problems or things I got to get out, those are my boys. I got my boys to discuss that with. You know, I got my people in my corner. What we're seeing now and what I think is the right way, and I haven't really done too much of it, to be honest, and now's a good time, is everyone needs to ask for some outside objective advice outside of your friends and family or however much support system you have. It's probably a good idea to be in some form of therapy, to talk to somebody, to have an outside voice, because, you know, what we do is we get in this hole and it keeps getting deeper. And everyone, I don't give a shit who you are. You have to reach out at some point. And you got to have, whether it's a stranger walking by, sometimes it's not enough to have friends or family be like, hey, I need a hand up here. I need some help.
The olive branch, right? The olive branch.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be this major catastrophe to where you reach out. And, you know, everyone needs it. And you're going to learn something, you know, from seeking that help. So I only think it's a good thing, and one that I've resisted for a long time. I tried to get a therapist during COVID. It was like, maybe I need to check this therapy thing out. And probably the wrong time to start looking for – it's a dance too. You got to find the right person.
Well, and everybody was in demand at that point. We all needed somebody during that whole process.
Oh, man.
Thank you for sharing that, man. That's powerful, man. And I've tried to tell men out there everywhere. It's like, it's not – you know, you're not too macho to put that olive branch out there and reach out to somebody that might actually listen. And you know, we're just human beings. We're just trying. I'm a dad of three kids. You know, I have to ask for advice all the time. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah. People try to push through. They try to be the man up. They try to be that person. And, you know, I think it's not only women, it's men. Everybody suffers from the same condition. It's easiest for us to come up with the list of things we'd like to improve about ourselves, right? It's also important to recognize all of our positive attributes. What are some of the personality traits that Brandon is most proud of?
Personality traits? It's hard for me, you know. I'm an optimistic dude, but I also, you know, the glass is half full, glass is half empty. I'm like, well, that's a half full glass right there, but someone drank half of it as well, you know, so it goes. But, you know, you always look for, I do approach everything with some trepidation, and I'm always like, know my sides, know where my exits are, waiting for it to fall apart, never being like, this is it, you made it, you know, so I'm cautious in that way and leery of a lot of things in that regard, which I think is also a good attribute and sometimes can be detrimental. But I do think things are pretty funny and absurd a lot of the times. And if I do get mad at something, I usually get angry at inanimate objects and some of the bigger things that maybe I should, you know, I can be pretty even keeled. But I don't hold grudges, And and I don't, you know, I know where some bodies are buried. I don't think it does, you know, I think it does. It's good to, you know, you got to keep things close to the vest sometimes, and you got to be there, you know. So I think seeing the world through a lens, that's like, well, you know, you got to, it's funny and it's absurd and it's beautiful at the end of the day.
Sure.
And you have to change your paradigm. Has to have more light than dark, because the light does always win, regardless of what you believe. The light, it's been winning for a very long time, and you got to keep it light. You never stop learning, and you got to laugh at yourself. And I don't know if that answered your question.
Well,
but
I want to say right now to everybody who's listening to that answer, Brandon is a beautiful human being. He's super conscious of his feelings, his emotions, and he's made a career out of utilizing those emotions for his acting career, his professional career. And, you know, honestly, I'm very lucky to have him on the show, and I'm lucky to have him sharing as much as he is right now. Brandon, I want to also ask you, all my guests, they take a ride in like the Jacob Young time machine. But some of the things I've been asking people lately is like just a real quick, it's sort of a random, like, you know, throw it out there question. But if you had a superpower, what would it be? Like, what would Brandon's superpower be if you could have it?
I just talked about this the other day, and a girlfriend of mine talked me into something else. And I was like, oh, yeah. No, that is better.
they always come up with the good ones, don't they, the girls?
I'm like, yeah, they do. And they're like, well, technically, what you said, you could do both of these things with that one superpower. And I was like, damn it, you're right. I think the first thing I said was, I want to fly. But then I thought about it, and I was like, well, how fast am I going? If I'm going 500 miles an hour, I mean, I still got to fly to, like, Paris, and, like, that's got to suck because it's probably pretty cold. You know, it's still talking about a couple hours. Yeah. And, I mean, it kind of – it's not, like, ideal. You know, it'd be cool to fly. Fantastic. But we're talking about, like – yeah, dude. I mean, I've been to Cape Town.
You're gonna get bugs in the grill as you're flying.
Yeah, exactly.
There might be a bird or two that hits you in the smacker.
Your skin's gonna look all jacked up after you're just flying 1,000 miles an hour.
But
for
you
like
will
10
you
hours.
Will have that perfect like hair though. Like you'll have that wind.
Yeah, the
blown
wind
hair.
Will hit it. Well, you have the wind blown hair, but it's like I've taken a flight. I've been to South Africa a few times. And that's like a 23-hour minimum
flight.
That's
a long flight. I did it from L.A. through the Middle East, from there down to South Africa.
You know what it is.
It is a long flight.
So if I'm flying, right, and it's like, Brandon, you go faster than a jet, bro. That's your superpower. That's your gift you're bestowed with. It's like, okay, so what, I fly to South Africa? And it's 15 hours instead of the 23 hours. No, thank you. I want to teleport. That's my final answer.
Well,
I want teleportation. I
was watching on TikTok. I believe everything that's on TikTok. I mean, that's my superpower. Somebody said by 2026 we're teleporting. Do you believe it?
I don't think we'll see that in our lifetime. I don't think so.
I don't know. I would like to. I wouldn't we want to be the one guinea pigging it. I think teleportation is – that's a radical, amazing idea. I know that they can, like, teleport molecules, but, like people, that's like – whew.
Small distances is my understanding. Like, very small sort of –
Do you know anything about the Philadelphia Project?
No.
So
I've heard about it.
The Philadelphia Project was like a World War II experiment. And I'm trying to hack this up, but it was a teleportation, double underground black operation thing that the government was trying to do. They had recently gotten technology from German scientists after, taking, World War II, and they were in Philadelphia, and they had these sailors on like a battleship, and the battleship was, I think it was Philadelphia. I may be wrong, but
the name of the
battleship,
ship,
but, or something like but that? That's why I think it was called the Philadelphia Project. But, there is records from the sailors, the captains, and they literally teleported from way north of Philadelphia and disappeared and then teleported. And it was the first time that they tested the technology. And I recently read something. I was like, oh, this is weird. They're like, well, teleportation is going to be available in 2026 if they wanted to actually do it. I don't know what's real, but there's documented reports where people lost the time. People didn't know where the battleship went to, and it just suddenly appeared again. and these are the accounts from the sailors that were on board.
Wow, that's I mean, look, right? It's a strange thing because, you look at, for sure, different dimensions, different worlds, different things where you show up to places, you're like, I know 100% I've been here before. I know I've been here before, and it's not, well, perhaps in a dream, and the mind doesn't, so there's all these things that, I've had some psychedelic experiences over the years that were beautiful things that, maybe there was some other substances in play, but it really did kind of rewire the way I thought about the world
like psychedelics.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you start to, and it's only until maybe you've done them or experienced where you think like we're very small and there's so many things we don't know and can't tap into that are happening all around us in any given time. I mean, you see with your kids, and I still trip out about it. When you stand in a garden and then after you water that garden, sit back and be quiet for a second. Watch what goes on, what you can literally see. And
with the naked eye.
With the naked eye. And what, the whole thing of watching paint dry. Well, go watch some paint dry every now and again. Sit there and be still. There's stuff that we can't even tap into it.
I think you're talking like just mindfulness, right? Just being aware of your surroundings. I try to every day just take moments and say, guys, this is true. I say this while I'm running, while I'm exercising, when I hate to do it because like I know I need to do it. I have to do it because I need to look a certain way, but I also need to be really healthy, conscious, and be like, but I'm also like, it's okay to be 42 years old and maybe a little bit overweight and don't have the six pack and the whole deal. But at the same time, while I'm running, I say, I'm grateful that I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for the sunrise. I'm grateful for my wife. I'm grateful for my children. I'm grateful to be breathing, and I'm grateful for my friends. And eventually what you just start rewiring yourself is that you're forever grateful, and we all should be. We should all just sit there and realize if you have an opportunity right now to change your perspective. I don't, look, I grew up, I've talked about this. Listen to the last podcast. I talked about my not ideal situation growing up. That doesn't make it worse than anybody else's. It doesn't mean that you didn't have a more troubled childhood. But, guys, we can rewire it. You just have to believe it and say it enough times. It's okay. It's scary to agree to do that sometimes. Like, it's hard to just get to that place. But I'm telling you, I breathe easier.
Yeah.
My miles I'm running get faster.
Yeah.
I feel stronger having that opportunity. How about you, Brandon?
No, I mean, same. And it goes to everything that we're talking about is that mindfulness and that the little tweaks and changes that we do every second, every minute, these little things to reframe it, reframing everything always. And running is a good example now too, because like when you're, man, do I know that if I'm stressed or I don't know. I haven't suffered anxiety or depression like a lot of other friends and family I have. I mean, you only know what you know, right? It wasn't up until very recently that I was like, maybe there's a little undercurrent of some anxiety that creeps through every now and again. I know that working out for me or getting the heart rate up for I think most humans is kind of how we're meant to be. And it's within that that things start to dissipate, but also these mantras that you're talking about of when I have these aha moments is like, I'm so grateful to be able to run right now, because there's nothing like being hurt or when you can't, I don't have back problems. I threw out my back like 6 months ago for about 3 weeks.
How debilitating was that?
I was completely depressed. It went from the night before running being like, this sucks, man. I hate running. Maybe same thing you're saying. Maybe I'm going to pack it up for a couple weeks. Why do I need to do this? To 3 days later, back's hurt. It's like, all I want to do is have that like it was 3 days ago. I just want it to go back to, I'll take the shortness of breath or the running up the hill, sweating my balls off or all the pain. I will take that. If I can just have it back, it changes on a dime.
Yeah.
And at least you have your health. All the mantras of the bumper stickers are so true. At least you have your health, you know, today.
Yeah.
It's so true. And your family, because it changes, man.
It changes in a second. All my guests, Brandon, take a ride in the Jacob Young time machine and they give advice to their younger selves. What would you want to say to Brandon when he was shooting the girl next door?
Good question, man. I would say the one thing I would say to myself then, because I was 28 to 21 during that period. I also blew off the premiere to go to Italy for my buddy's 21st birthday, which no regrets in life, doesn't do any good. But
now you're just bragging.
Well, I blew off this premiere to go to take a vacation to see my 21-year-old best friend in Italy. I wouldn't have done that, but I would say old Brandon out to Brandon at that time, I would say, keep digging, man. Now's the time. You read more books. You dig in more. You realize how fleeting everything is. Be more grateful, right? Take more stock in where you are right now. And always keep digging, you know, because you can't see anything. What I take away from that or now I keep thinking about is, you can never see the forest through the trees, right? All you can be is try to be as mindful and present as you can.
One of my favorite expressions, I just have to say. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it would be. And it would be, you're not going to be able to see the forest through these trees right now. But one thing that you can be doing is keep digging and looking around for berries, for water, just to feel the soil underneath your hands. Never stop learning. And there is an element of 20 to 21-year-olds just where the mind goes at that point of like, you know, I also came to L.A. and this was, then I'm in this movie a couple days later. It's like, well, you've arrived. It's like you never arrived, dum-dum. You never arrive. Okay. Keep digging. Shut up. You know, keep working. That's it.
I was that's such great advice. And it got me thinking because I was doing a VOX – for Girl Next Door, I was in New York City, and I remember they said, can you come to the studio? I just taken this new job at All My Children. And so I go down like way downtown to the Village, and Emil's there, Emil Hirsch, and he's shooting something and talking about this advice that you're giving yourself. And there's things that I go back and I go, should I have listened to that, or should I have done what I just did, my trajectory that it was? I'm there. Emil's there. We're both doing the VO for the movie. Luke's in L.A. Chuck Gordon's in L.A. They're via – like this is Skype in the early infancy of
– Early days.
early days. We're talking 2001. This was already happening, folks. We are literally doing this like from New York to Los Angeles. And tied in with a mixer, a videographer, you know, like just some – they had a whole studio. They had a studio, whatever. But I remember Meal telling me, he's like, dude, don't take another contract. People are going to keep hiring you. He told me that. And I said, you know, I don't know, man. You know, like these people are offering me this money and, you know, what do you do? And I'm not going to say that I settled because I always wanted to live in New York. But I also was able to get paid and live in New York, which is even harder for an actor. So to have a job, be employed, and then like showing up for champagne problems and doing VO for a movie that I'd done the year before, I wasn't like upset about that. But
right.
That advice haunts me to this day. As an actor and thinking, did Emil know something that I didn't know? Was it just, you know, was it sound advice or was it something that, I don't know. So
impossible to know, right? Zig. Yeah.
I don't regret anything. I don't because
no,
everything
good.
Yeah. It doesn't do any good, but like, you know, he was a young lad, you know, and he's had a great successful career. You know, and he still continues to have a very successful career. But I felt like I was like, shit, maybe I should listen to the younger man. You know,
I think you can sleep soundly on that one, though, because this is why. And this is just I'm just spitballing and talking out of my ass like I do for everything. But if it would have been like, I don't know. I see some of these big dogs around this actor studio or just big dogs in general that have that wisdom. And there's nothing like a big dog. If an old, wise, grizzled old man said that same thing that he told you then it would be like, oh, well, that, you know, I'm older than you, bud, you know, sort of thing. And, you know, or the person who's younger than you calling you, bud, it's like, well, bud, let me give you some advice. It's like, first off, okay, I'll listen. But who knows? It's impossible to know. I know that always taking there's other worse decisions too is always taking the work. If that there's work to go to, I mean it's always hard to weigh. I know that I've made I don't have any regrets. The only regret I have, and it was around Girl Next Door times. The only, and it's not even a regret because it doesn't really do any good to deal with it, but not going to something when I could have moved it back simply a week for career or whatever it would have led or not led. I just would have liked to have gone to the Playboy Mansion, but the one almost regret I have is like stay in town for one more week and plan your trip to Italy. Like it's kind of a big deal when a big movie comes out. You got a chance to go.
Well, when we're younger, too, we go, there's going to be 16 of those.
Exactly.
We're like, this is just the first one. Like, what's the big deal? Like, I know that mentality. And you, I guarantee you, because you aced it. You killed it. You were amazing in the movie. But I guarantee you're like, this is the first of, like, my entire career.
Yeah.
And I get an opportunity to go to Italy. So why not? So.
Yeah.
But also retrospective, great advice to young self. I like that. I like it. I like it because that means you give you know you really care.
Yeah, yeah.
You care.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing this life and this business, man. And it, but it's the same things. It so goes back to everything we're talking about is. I remember when I took about a year when I was 26, I took a sabbatical from acting and theater. I was selling Dunn Edwards paint. I was making good money, great money. They're like, you're the Santa Barbara Ventura guy, Brandon. Go open up that market for Dunn Edwards and nice. This stuff. And I loved doing it. And I still, you know, still do. It was like, those were good times, but I was pretty stifled and not the person who I am because you're all of a sudden looking at like, this thing's too complex. I'm going to go do something else. I'm going to go make some money. And you know, I don't need this acting stuff. And so you take a year off. I was miserable. I was kind of crotchety to be around. And people were like, Brandon, what's up, man? You have, I was like, yeah, I'm happy. I'm selling paint. I'm making good money. It's great money. Yada, yada. But I went and saw The Pillow Man on Broadway.
Oh, I loved Pillow Man. I saw it on Broadway that year it came out. Yeah. Irish writer that does
McDonough.
Yeah. Unbelievable. He's probably one of my favorite authors, period. Pillow Man. And it was wasn't it Jeff Goldblum? No. It was Jeff Goldblum. It was
Jeff Goldblum, Billy Crudup.
Billy Crudup.
Michael
Stuhlbarg. Exactly.
And Billy Crudup.
Great play. I saw it, and then it took home some Tonys as well.
Yeah, cleaned up. And that was and that was the first time that I had spent significant time in New York, and that was the first show I'd ever seen on Broadway during that time of my Dunn Edwards paint, not acting. I saw Michael Stuhlbarg in that show. The show was amazing. Billy Crudup, Jeff Goldblum, Ivanka, the other actor, who you know if you saw him, Ivanka, character actor who's been around for a long time, had a great career. He was in there as well. But anyway, I saw it, and Michael Stuhlbarg in particular, of a show full of badasses, he was so good in it. And at that time, I didn't know who the fuck this guy was. And he hadn't done Call Me By Your Name or been on Boardwalk Empire or any of that. I just saw this guy, and I was like, man, I was so engrossed in the story and just blown away by a performance particularly that he gave that I was like, this is everything, man. Like, if I could just
let it all hang out. If you could just let it all hang out like that, right?
Just let it all hang out. And that changed. That just reminded me, said, hey, dum-dum, there's no choices in this life of one or the other. Nah, I gave it up because I got the family. I got to go do the thing. No, you don't. You don't. You can make things work. It is all about balance. It's just another avenue of how you're going to do it. My thing was, I'm going to go make money. I don't need this acting stuff. It's like, are you crazy? That's all you've been doing your whole life. And that gave me that, hey, dum-dum, go do a play. Go call your old agent again. Go do whatever you got to do. Don't stop the hustle.
Yeah.
And that's probably the biggest advice I would give to any actor. It's like, if you love doing it, don't ever stop then, because it doesn't matter when it picks off. You're not going to be the first. You're not going to be the last. Jack Nicholson, Morgan Freeman, you can go down a list, and people like stories too.
Pierce Brosnan. Right? Like, you
there's
know,
all, so many
guys that didn't make it till they were much later in life.
You know, all these stories and all these things that people, you know, they want to attach things to stories or be like, who would have thought, you know, what have you been doing for the last 10 years? It's like a lot of stuff, you know, they're like, did you think, who knows, he could have done dramatic stuff we didn't know he could do comedy. It's like, well. Yeah, neither did the whatever other shows.
He didn't know it until he was 44 years old.
Right. Right.
He's like, I always thought it was funny. All my friends and everybody comes on the podcast, they also we talk about Father Flanagan's motto. And of course, it was just a motto that Boys Town actually created, but it came out of a real life experience with Father Flanagan. In the very early days, World War One, World War Two, before he passed away, and like they were just starting Boys Town, and you know they didn't have all the medical equipment, and the boys literally would carry other kids to sporting events. They would take them to class because they didn't have a wheelchair, they didn't have crutches. And Father, one day, you know, out of just the sweetness and the openness, he says, "Isn't he heavy?" He said, "He isn't heavy, Father. He's my brother," and meaning that. We all, at some point in our life, have somebody that carries us. Brandon, who's carried you?
That's a good question. I got to go with that. I have a pretty small family. And, it could be multiple people, but I got to go. I got to go with me madre. And it's funny. And I'm sure you're going to get a dose of this as being a parent, as the kids get older, sometimes the nastiest and the person I'm meanest to is the one I love the most, where it's like, Mom, I got to go. Or like, you don't know what you're talking, you know, yeah. I've spit some venom at the woman. And, you know, she's carried me and started this whole acting thing. And I, you know, someone goes, you'll do it for your kids one day, Brandon. I'm not joking, Jacob. I wouldn't do the things that she did for my own kids. I appreciate, I'm like, looks like I lucked out, but little, you know, little Brandon, little Mr. Brandon, Mrs., you know, Brandon Irons, like, they're not going to get what my mom did. You know, she's always been there. She always put good, a good moral compass in my head. And also, you know, she let me stay up late for Arsenio Hall. Never gave me a bedtime. She's done things that I'll never do for my kids. Like, I don't care if you could stay up. You can stay up as late as you want. You better be up at 6:30. You know, no excuses. So I still do that. I get up early.
Who was on Arsenio that you had to stay up that night?
Dude, who was it on Arsenio? That was the.
That's what I want to know.
Yeah, who was it? I had to know. I was like, whatever.
You were stoked. You're like, I can't miss this episode.
No, and I never did. And I never did. I was like, dude, there's no way I'm gonna go to bed at what, 10 o'clock, and miss out who could potentially be Damon Wayans could be on Arsenio tonight. And I'm a huge Damon Wayans fan at this time. Like, yeah, get out of here.
Course.
Get out of Dodge.
Sure.
I'm staying up. But my mom, man, she's been the best.
Brother, thank you for sharing that. That's beautiful. Sometimes it takes an army. Sometimes it takes the back of one human being. And it's a beautiful thing that you're able to go ahead and just openly talk about that. So I thank you. And I know our audience is going to thank you for that as well. Brandon, I want to say thank you again. Just this is like been a great time to catch up with you. You're so like you just like brother. I knew it was going to be that. I have to say right away. Anybody who's listening, this is probably one of my favorite episodes by far. Just happens to be not only a friend, but I knew that Brandon, and we only recently reconnected. He was always pure of heart, and he is a great guy and an incredible actor. So make sure you check out anything that he's in. Things are coming up. Be on the lookout. It was great catching up. It was great reconnecting. We'll always be bonded, obviously, through the girl next door. I hope that we can work together again. And I'm just wishing you continued success.
We will, brother. I love you, man. Thanks for really, really glad doing this, man. This is a lot of fun.
This is about all the time that we have for this week for Real Conversation, which is sponsored by Boys Town. It's also sponsored by the Boys Town National Hotline. And if you're in crisis or you need someone, I don't know, just to simply talk to you, just please call them. The Boys Town toll-free National Hotline is 1-800-448-3000. It's a 24/7 crisis resource referral number for kids and their parents. Adults, and they're there for you. You don't feel like talking? Don't call them. Text them. Voice. You text voice to 20121. Someone will get back to you immediately. Thank you for joining me on Real Conversations. I'm Jacob Young. Till next time, love yourselves and love each other.